Council Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:20 p.m. on February 22nd. With us, we have Representative Thompson, Representative Sadler, myself, Chair Olson, and Representative Miller. We also have at the table Representative Costello, who has the second bell up, but since she was the first one here, she gets to sit with the other kids in the room. I ask everybody to please turn off your BlackBerries or cell phones. Everybody's been good this year, and we haven't had any donuts or bagels yet, so we're always looking for the first one. Three bills today, all of them non-controversial, or at least to the best of my knowledge, from the lack of any opposition to any of the three of them that we've received. First bill up will be sunset of boating regulation, and I believe both Representative Osterman and his staff, Astrid Lovano, are going to be delivering it.
What number are we on first?
301.
300?
301.
301. Boating regulations. So, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you've got us for as long as you need us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Alan Osterman from Kodiak, District 36. And this bill, as the title indicates, is boat safety. And I was involved back in 2000 when Representative Bill Hudson, at the time from Juneau, introduced the piece of legislation. And it has proven, I believe, over time, and I think the record will show, that it has saved people and it saved lives. And anytime you can get a life jacket on somebody, particularly the children, we've been able to save a number of different lives based upon the program itself. And so with that, I'm going to have my staff, Astrid Lovano, discuss the bill and go through it.
I'm going to interrupt briefly. We've been joined by Representative Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Within a minute of being on time, but close.
Better than usual.
Yeah.
Hi. Thank you, Chairman Olson and members of the committee. My name is Astrid Lovano. I am staff to Representative Osterman. Thank you for the opportunity to present on House Bill 301. As Representative Osterman said, the purpose of this bill is to repeal the sunset date on the Alaska Boating Safety Program. With that legislative action, the program is set to terminate on July 1st of 2013. Federal financial assistance for the program is provided through the United States Coast Guard, and the state became eligible for these funds following the passage in the year 2000 of House Bill 108, the Alaska Boating Safety Act. When the program was established, the 21st legislature cautiously added two sunset dates. The first repealed the Boating Safety Act in the event that the state did not receive the anticipated federal funds, and the second sunset the program by date. Since the program was established, the legislature has acted three times to extend the program, therefore recognizing its merits. The Boating Safety Program has now been in effect for 12 years, and recreational boaters are safer and better educated, and recreational boating fatalities are now on a downward trend. In comparing the number of fatalities during the first and second half of the last 10 years, fatalities have dropped 22.1%, and at least 22 Alaska children have survived a water emergency, thanks to a Kids Don't Float loaner life jacket. And the United States Coast Guard also, or life jacket wear rate studies also show increases in life jacket use. The Alaska Boating Safety Program is entirely funded by fees on users. A portion comes through the Sportfish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund, and the balance from State of Alaska boat registration receipts. So, for example, federal funding for fiscal year 2012 came in at $913,385. And state funding has consistently been $200,000 annually. Alaska's investment in boating safety is small when compared to the lives saved in Alaska. That concludes my introduction. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Oh, we've been joined by Speaker Chenault, so we're just about at a full committee. First question, Representative Sadler.
I'm going to surprise you by not having questions, Esther.
Oh, we're not going to let him off that light, though. Representative Costello.
Thank you. I really appreciate being offered the opportunity to ask a question through the chair. Is this the program that, so when I go to Sand Lake and I see life jackets there for children and families that are using the lake, is this the program that's responsible for that service?
Correct.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'd like the record to reflect we have them up and down the Kenai River, and they have, anecdotally, I've heard that they've had a real impact. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I really don't have a question, but I believe this is your first time to testify in front of a committee.
Yes, this is.
So I think we should at least have some fun. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No, is that a motion?
I support this 100%, and I appreciate the sponsors for bringing it forward. It does save lives, and I think it's a very worthwhile program. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just out of curiosity and just simply no more than that, in 2005, I see the costs were $478,000 a year, and in 2006, it jumped to $787,000, and we're up to about $1.4 million now. Is there a reason putting out more life vests or more advertising, or just why is the cost what it is, do you know?
Through the chair, you're asking why the cost has gone up or why the federal funds have increased?
Well, the it looks like the costs are $200,000 for through DMV, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Those costs have stayed constant, but just curious, from 2005 at less than $500,000 to 2011 at over $1 million. You know, and I realize it's all federal grant receipt money, but I'm just curious as to what's happening today versus what happened in 2005 that the cost went double.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff Johnson could probably answer that question a little bit better than I can, but it is U.S. Coast Guard funding, and I think that their funding towards the boating safety programs increased, and so that's why our portion of it increased as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Holmes, so we do have a full committee. Or a full boat, I guess. I'm sorry, I couldn't pass on. Any further questions for the sponsor, Representative Sadler?
Good much down, Mr. Chairman. is Jeff going to be stay on as the Boating Safety Officer Program Manager in DNR?
I believe he's on.
He's online. Through the chair. He's online.
I had a chance to work with him, and I know he's very enthusiastic. He brings a wealth of institutional knowledge and energy to it. I hope that the continuation of this program includes continuing with Jeff. He's a good guy.
Yeah. He's been really helpful.
And I guess I would ask a real question. There's a lot of good work being done. What might the program take on differently in the future now that once it's, assuming it gets reauthorized, it's looking good? You know, what new areas would you be working on?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Osterman, I think, again, it's a question for Jeff and how they want to expand or if they even want to expand the program. I know that over time they've picked up different safety programs and teaching programs that they've done throughout the life of the program. But Jeff would be the one to directly.
And I might add that we've got Joanna Bales, I believe, in the room. Or do we? No. We've got her online. We've got David Borg from the Coast Guard online, Ben Ellis, Jeff Johnson, and Kelly Toth, all for questions. So as soon as we get done with the sponsor, if there are any questions for any of those people, I'll repeat them again so you can have a selection. But any further questions for the sponsor? Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
And with that, Maria Bailey is here for questions only. Health and Social Services, any questions for Maria? Should we bring her up or no questions? Any questions for Jeff Johnson? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Johnson, just curious to know, with the reauthorization or the extension of this program, would you be sticking with it for long-term future?
Representative, through the chair, until my wife tells me I can quit, I'm still going to be here for a while.
And if I could ask the previous question, too, what areas would you want to do more of or less of? How the program's mission differ in the future from what it's been so far the last 10 years?
Representative Sadler, right now we're focusing on changes in behaviors in adult males in particular on one track, and the other is to educate the future voters of Alaska through the schools programs. And those are two programs that we're going to keep focusing on and expanding. Another piece of work that's extremely challenging for anybody that's in the injury prevention business is to try to reach rural Alaskans. And we're expanding efforts in rural areas as well. And that's challenging, but we feel like we're making some progress there as well.
And Jeff, with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, could you give some just brief outline of how you cooperate with other agencies like the Coast Guard or Power Squadrons or NOAA or Fish and Wildlife Service? Do you operate in a vacuum or do you cooperate with other agencies?
Representative, through the chair, when we came to the table, we came late. A lot of other really good programs are already out there. Health and Social Services, other partners in the Kids Don't Float program, the U.S. Coast Guard, Coast Guard Auxiliary, injury prevention specialists. You know, there were a lot of people that were pulling at the oars before we showed up, and we looked at it as a dike with some holes in it. We saw some opportunities to help, and it's rare that we participate in any program with at least not coordinating with our partners, if not joining them directly in specific programs. So the idea is to maximize the small amount of money that we have by working with others, and we take the partnership term very seriously in the boating world.
Last question. Is this program unique to Alaska, Jeff, or is this something that other states also get federal funding for?
Representative, through the chair, we were the last state to establish a state boating program. The other 56 states and territories had programs in play. As of 1987, Alaska was the only state without a program, even though our fatality rate was more than 20 times the national average over the same period. Fortunately for us, we were able to use the lessons learned from those other states and programs and high-grade some of the best ideas to put in place quickly in Alaska. And so we feel like we had a little bit of a head start, even though we were late to the game. And we're pretty proud of the small number of programs we have. We measure them. We feel that we're effective, and we're making progress. And so we're excited about what we're going to be doing in the future.
Well, good luck. Thanks.
We've also got Ben Ellis and Kelly Toth from DNR online. Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know who could answer the question. Maybe Jeff. Jeff, this is Representative Chenault. I was just curious, when we start talking about federal funding and we understand what position that the federal government is in today, have you heard anything from Washington in relationship to this program and either the continued funding or the possibility of a funding reduction based on any conversations that you're aware of at this time?
Representative, through the chair, the funding comes through the Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund. It's part of the Highway Trust Fund, but it's a user-pay-user-benefit system. So a lot of the revenue comes in from fuel taxes that are attributable to power boats, recreational boats, excise taxes on sport fishing equipment and other items. And it was designed as a user pay, user benefit system. It's widely supported by boating organizations around the country. And while I can't predict what Congress is going to do when it comes time to cut the budget, this program has a lot of support, and it's a direct benefit to the users that are paying into it. It's perceived that way nationally. We're also a really tiny program as compared to other, obviously, larger programs in the Highway Trust Fund. So we think we have a proven track record of being successful. And, you know, I always say that the best way to survive a legislative or congressional budget cut is to prove that you're doing a good job. And I think we at least have that to provide Congress. Right. And I'd like to pass this on to our director, Ben Ellis, to add something, please.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, through the chair. You know, it is a concern. And
Ben, could you state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
Excuse me. Ben. Ken Ellis, Director of Alaska State Parks. Mr. Speaker, the Chair, it is a concern concerning the federal level of funding. It's our understanding that the transportation bill probably will go through another set, if not several sets of continuing resolutions. And if that's the case, then our boating safety and our trails program, which received money from that vehicle, would be safe at the present time. But you're right, it is somewhat tenuous.
Follow-up?
Just a follow-up comment, Mr. Chairman. And while I believe that the program's a good program, I think that our military also does a great job. And we've seen what has happened at the federal level as far as funding toward the military. And certainly the comments coming out of D.C. that even the educational system is open for cuts. So while I support it, and this is federal funds, so I'm not concerned about it. I think that we just need to remember and understand that those funds are coming from the federal government. The federal government is making cuts to most programs, and we need to just be aware of that as a state if we want to continue providing the same type of services that we have in the past. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions for DNR?
Seeing none.
We've got David Borg, U.S. Coast Guard, online for any questions. No questions. Do we have anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Please join us.
Are you sure, Chris?
You bet. We got you.
So my name is Chris Osowski, and I'm one of the volunteer members appointed by the governor to the Boating Safety Commission. And so we meet twice a year to get together with Jeff and Ben and all of them and evaluate the success of the programs and all that. And I've lived in Alaska since 1970 and raised two small children. And looking at my parents live on a homestead that you can only access on the river system. So I'm real familiar with Alaska, with the needs and the time that our people spend on the waterways. And to have a group with paying attention to trying to make them safer, trying to instill the better habits in them to ensure that they survive something like this, and participating as a volunteer and seeing the frugal nature with which they apply all the things they do, I'm thoroughly impressed with the organization that they run and the bang we get for the buck that as a member of the state. I just think it's a good program, and it's and also it'd be worthwhile to limit the gyrations we go through worrying about funding and let us focus more on the boating, because you know, with two meetings a year, it's like every other year we're worried about whether we're going to get the extension again. So it would sure help us to do a better job interfacing with them if we had a little longer time.
I've got the first question. It may not be totally appropriate, but is any of this money going to drown-proofing of infants, drown-proofing program? I know we had one in Anchorage. I haven't lived in Anchorage since the early 80s, but there was one in Anchorage where apparently if you take an infant that's, I believe, 4 to 6 months of age, they have no fear of water, and you can teach them how to roll over on their back. They go into the water, they roll over and have their head out of the water, and it's a reflex action, and because they have no fear of it, it's pretty easy to train kids. And having had a member of my family that fell off a sailboat 20 miles out at sea and had been through that program and floated on his back for about 8 minutes until they could get the sailboat back to pull him out, I know it's a good program. But is that something that we could do with this money if we had any left over, or is it something that's being done already? Or
To the chair, we've discussed things about infants as far as flotation devices, modern advances there, and in evaluating when and how we could bring them into play, but we haven't necessarily pursued the actual training of children. The training we've been focusing on is making them aware of the value of having a flotation device on, and then the cold water dangers is another area of focus. So certainly something I'll take back to them, although I'm sure they're listening.
But again, we appreciate your service. We know what we have a real good idea on what it's like to be a volunteer for the state of Alaska in any kind of a capacity after spending the morning with APOC. Any further questions? Come on, Craig, one more.
He's nope. Mr. Chairman, he's a constituent, and I am. He's a good guy.
No, we appreciate him making the effort to come down and join us. Dan?
I've got a question. I've got a question, not necessarily for Chris, but maybe for Director Ellis. Maybe you can answer, Chris. The speaker raised the issue of what might happen if federal funding was decreased or taken away entirely. Are Alaska's boat registration fees in line with or higher or lower than other states? So would that be a possible source of revenue should we need to go there in the future?
I think I, through the chair, should let Jeff answer that. I believe they're about normal with the other states, and I don't think we have enough registrations that would make a substantial difference without the federal funding.
I guess I'd also like to know if Jeff could answer how much money do we raise by the boat registration fees in Alaska? How much does the state, do state boat users kick in?
Representative, through the chair, Alaska brings in about $570,000 annually in boat registration receipts. The amount of boat registration in Alaska was a number that was derived by the Coast Guard. The Congressional Budget Office requires federal agencies to investigate the cost of running programs and to charge no more than that amount, at least when it comes to boat registration that applied. And they derived that number in 1998. That's what it cost the government in Alaska to register boats when the Coast Guard was doing it. We have that same fee in place 12 years later. I don't have the information about where we stand with regard to other states, but anecdotally, I'd have to say that our boat registration fees are among the lowest in the nation. And Director Ellis would like to add a comment.
Representative Saddam, through the chair, I think you and Speaker Chennault have hit upon an issue that we need to be looking at down the road. Obviously, this bill before us now deals with the sunset of the state requirement, and while we're very supportive of that, the other sunset is if the federal program goes away. And at that time, maybe even before that, we need to be looking at what type of safety net is there so that we can continue this really important program of providing life jackets and teaching people, whether they're adults or kids, that even if they do know how to swim, and it would be great to everybody know how to swim, that with the cold water immersion that we deal with up here, sometimes swimming doesn't get you very far. So thank you for the questions, and it'd be an area we would love to work with you on.
And can I clarify from Jeff? So you said that the $570,000 figure mentioned, that's what it was decided that in 1998 that that's what Alaska would get, or that's what we actually do generate in registration fees?
Representative, through the chair, that's the amount of money that DMV collects annually from boaters registering their boats. Okay. We get a portion of those receipts. Some of those are used by DMV to execute the program.
Thank you. Good.
Well, thanks again. Any further, anybody else in the room that would care to testify? Seeing none, do we have anybody online that would, that's queued up? Boy, Alan, you're getting off easy. With that, I'll close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion. Is there any committee discussion?
Kids don't float.
Ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a good bill. Thank you. I'd like to move House Bill number 301, designated 27LS1152 / A out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill will move out of committee, and we will take a brief at ease.
back page.
We're back on the record. Second item on the calendar today is House Bill 252, Income Tax Exemption. We've got the sponsor in the room, Mia Costello, Representative Mia Costello, and I believe the bill is going to be presented by Josh Walton, who's sitting at the table. And, or both of you, or?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I'd be interested in presenting it first, and then if there were any questions, Josh would be available.
My pleasure.
Okay. For the members, my name is Representative Mia Costello from District 27. What House Bill 252 does is it exempts certain qualifying small businesses that have $50 million or less in aggregate gross assets from the state's corporate income tax. The industries that would qualify for this, in order to determine what those are, we look back to the federal law, which this dovetails with, which is the 1202C corporation. A 1202C corporation is defined as using 80% or more of its assets in the active conduct of its business. So the types of companies we're talking about trying to bring to Alaska include intellectual property, the software industry, and innovation. The reason we are trying to attract a C corp is because if you file as a C corporation, you have the ability to attract unlimited investors in your company. The federal legislation allows for investors in that company to be exempt from the capital gains tax if they keep their money in the company for at least 5 years. So in Alaska, what we have found is we find that many companies avoid filing as a C corp to avoid the fifth highest corporate tax rate in the country, which is 9.4% once you reach 90,000. Instead, they file as an S corp, which has limited investors. Essentially, in that situation, it's you have an idea for a business and then you start dialing your closest 100 friends. So what this legislation aims to do is to attract industries to Alaska that are not here, and also to attract the investment that would come with those startups. And we do have an amendment before the committee. If I could briefly go through that.
Certainly.
The amendment before you, the first lines 1 through 4.
Perhaps we ought to adopt the amendment first. Do I hear a motion to adopt Amendment number one?
Mr. Chairman, move we adopt amendment number one.
And I'll oppose for purposes of discussion. And officially, I believe it's amendment number M2. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or at least it is mine. Does yes. that match up with yours?
Yes. Thank you, through the chair. The first change would include the Internal Revenue Code Section 1202 that incorporates the 80% or more of the assets have to be used in the active conduct of the business. The next one corrects a typographical error on the next change in the amendment, removes the requirement that the qualifying business file a report documenting their eligibility for the exemption.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may interrupt.
Certainly.
My understanding on that is that it's because they already filed that information with the federal government and it would simply be duplicative. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay.
The next change addresses a potential conflict with the Equal Protection and Interstate Commerce Clause. So we originally had drafted the bill so that the company had to be headquartered in Alaska. We are not able to do that because we wanted to avoid violation of that Interstate Commerce Clause. However, it still does require that the work be done in Alaska. So we are still able to attract the business to our state. The next change deletes definitions that are no longer used in the statute. Next change is a punctuation correction. And finally, there's a sunset provision included so that the program would sunset July 1st, 2023.
That it?
That's all I have,
That's all the amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Little amendment.
Josh, your turn. You can walk us through.
For the record, Joshua Walton, District
those of the
amendment. Oh, let's, I'll remove my objection. Is there further any further objection to Amendment M2? City Amendment's adopted. No, thank you. Josh, please state your name and affiliation to the record, and welcome to the committee. I believe this is your first time here.
For the record, my name is Joshua Walton. I'm staff representative Mia Costello, and that is correct, Mr. Chair. This is my first time testifying before any committee that wasn't the subcommittee that we were working outside.
So you know what's going to happen.
I got a little bit of a foreshadowing of it through the chair.
He's not as cute as he was either.
Mr. Chairman, that all
move it straight.
Move it straight.
I'm going to object for terms of discussion.
Missing 8 seconds.
Let me get my.
Hit that again.
Leave him alone.
Sorry for passing discussion.
Through the chair, with the chair's permission, I'll perhaps go into a little bit of detail as to the specifics of the bill and make myself available to answer any questions regarding any of the provisions that I described. So as Representative Costello has mentioned, the bill is a state corporate tax exemption for qualifying small businesses, as that term is defined in the Internal Revenue Code, Section 1202. That section is meant to encourage investment, particularly venture capital investment, in companies that it's primarily targeted at companies that are startups and particularly involved in research and development, innovation, intellectual property, software development. These are the sorts of companies that as they grow, this is a very fast growing sector. And if in the interest of working towards diversifying Alaska's economy, if this is a goal that we agree we should do, the fastest way and most effective way to do that is to branch out into sectors that are going to grow and grow quickly. I would like to also state that while this exempts these particular types of companies, it doesn't exempt them forever. This is an exemption that the companies can outgrow. The requirements under Section 1202 are that in order to qualify, a company has to have less than $50 million in aggregate gross assets. 80% or more of those assets have to be used in the active conduct of the business, which is a significant hurdle to overcome. To help companies overcome this, there are special provisions in the tax code that allow research costs, startup costs, and experimentation costs to be counted towards that 80%, helping those companies that engage in those sorts of activities crest that 80% bar a little bit easier. As a result of that, in practice, Section 1202 has been used primarily and most effectively to encourage investment in companies that tend to be more innovation research-based. There are a number of industries that are excluded, and I'd be happy to, if a member would be interested, I'd be happy to go into those, but one of the key issue that we're looking that we're facing, we've received some anecdotal evidence, for example, that you have venture capitalists in Alaska who are looking for vehicles within the state in which to invest. And the difficulty that they face is that there aren't any, or very few. And the reason for that is because in order for venture capitalists to invest in these sorts of high-growth companies, those high-growth companies have to be a C corporation. C corporations are the only sorts of corporate class structure that is not a pass-through entity. That is, it maintains its own corporate income tax liability. Because of that, and so they are the only ones that come under the state's corporate income tax structure. And as Representative Costello mentioned, we have the fifth highest tax rate, state corporate income tax rate in the country. So the anecdotal evidence we hear of is of entrepreneurs in Alaska looking to start a tech or innovation-driven company and who do in Montana, where the tax that they will be paying is a lot lower. These companies tend to be highly mobile. There aren't a lot of constraints on where they there aren't a lot of geographical constraints on where they can locate, and so we have a lot of flexibility, and we have an opportunity to attract them here to Alaska. Unfortunately, the high rate of taxation that we impose upon them is it tends to push them away and drive those businesses elsewhere.
Representative Sandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be a good time to describe, give some examples of what kinds of businesses, what are the select industries in the IRS Code 1202? There's a couple references to mobile or high growth or entrepreneur, but can you characterize a couple examples of what kind of companies we're talking about, what kind of industries?
Through the Chair, Representative Sandler, you're asking for the companies that are excluded or the sorts of companies that...
That would be included, I guess...
That would be exempted from...
Yes.
It's a little bit difficult, through the Chair, Representative Sandler, for us to say because we have not been able to find very many examples of companies that would qualify in Alaska right now. From looking outside of the state nationally, it tends to be tech companies. So biotech, information services, computers, networking, software, and a wide variety of companies that are seeking to develop new products. R&D-based companies. Okay. I hope I've answered your question.
It helps. I'm just trying to get some mental picture of what kind of company this is. Is this an HP, you know, startup? Is this Apple 30 years ago, or is this Genentech? Or
through the chair, Representative Sandler, yes, so all of those.
Cilantro.
Mm-hmm.
We hope not. But, okay.
through the chair, and members of the committee, it may seem a little bit unusual that this is a problem in Alaska because of the other types of corporate structures that we have, limited liability corporations and S corporations are pass-through entities. And so you do have a lot of startup activity in businesses that are created under those structures. The problem with those structures is that there are severe limitations on who can invest in those and the amount of capital that you can raise by adopting one of those structures. If you want to be the next Google or the next Apple, what you want and what you need is to raise a lot of capital very quickly. To do that, you need a lot of shareholders. S corporations are limited to 100 shareholders. You can only have one class of stock, and other companies can't invest in your company if you're an S corporation. You have to be a C corporation in order for a venture capital firm to invest in your company. So the difficulty then is if we're, you know, it's I hesitate to say that Alaska is not a welcoming place for entrepreneurship. It certainly is a welcoming place for entrepreneurship. But if you wish to start the sort of company that is going to grow and grow quickly and become a publicly traded company, Alaska's tax structure is not particularly friendly for that. And this is what this bill is trying to help at least encourage, create a sort of a nursery environment in Alaska for these companies that will eventually become large, and at that point they'll have outgrown their exemption and will become taxpayers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm noting that through the language here I constantly see the word corporation. Now if a small company that would qualify but they're not necessarily incorporated, would this still apply to them?
Through the chair, Representative Miller, this exemption this only exempts C corporations, and so you would have to be incorporated as not only a corporation but specifically a C corporation.
Okay, so it's very specific to that group. And then I may have misheard, but I just wanted to review when Representative Costello was describing part of the amendment. I'm pretty sure I heard her say that there is a preponderance of work that is done in Alaska. Is that correct as part of what qualifies you for this exemption?
Through the chair, Representative Miller, a C corporation's corporate tax, corporate income tax liability depends on the business activities that are done in Alaska. If a company does all of, carries out all of their business in Alaska, then they would and still met the overall criteria for this exemption, then all of their activities would be exempted. We had initially, as Representative Costello had mentioned, we put in a requirement that the company had to be headquartered in Alaska. We received word from the Department of Law that that violated the Interstate Commerce Clause and Equal Protection Clauses of the Constitution, so we had to remove that. And in that case, a 1202C corporation that's headquartered anywhere would receive, would be eligible for an exemption for their activities in Alaska, because those are the only activities for which they'd become liable under Alaska corporate income tax.
Thank you.
In the past 6 years, we've had, generically speaking, we've had probably three or four bills that have been similar to this, with the commonality being that we were trying to catch up with other states that had an advantage on us. You mentioned Montana. Are there other states that this bill specifically is catching us up with? Or
Mr. Chair, I'm afraid I don't recall the who's on the bottom of the list of income tax. This bill doesn't, as to my knowledge, this is the only program, we're proposing the only program like this in the country.
So we're going to be the leader of the pack rather than...
That's correct, sir.
Being the tail of the dog. Mm-hmm.
We would move from being the fifth least encouraging environment for these sorts of businesses to being at least tied for first, if not outright first, while they're small.
Representative Holmes? No? Representative Chenault? Well, thank you very much.
Through the chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
And I'd like to add, we have Joanna Bale still here, but on the right bill. We're available for questions if anybody has any of Joanna. Are we going to let Joanna off the hook, too? Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? And outside the building, we do have a few people who are probably going to explain to us why we need it. Tyler Arnold, are you with us?
For the record, my name is Tyler Arnold. Hello.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us. Please state your name or your affiliation.
Yeah, I'm the founder of Tyler Systems and the CEO of Simply Social, a company that provides social media services.
Well, please continue.
Thank you. I'm a 19-year-old entrepreneur born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska. I was 16 when I started my first IT company, Tyler Systems, and won the SBA Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award in 2011. My current startup, Simply Social, brings together a global team, all a part of a 1202C corporation founded right here in Alaska. Our C Corp status allows us to be more attractive to investors and geared towards international business. It allows us to be a high-growth company, or so we hope, as is the case with most startups. While we may be global, we act local, and our home state, unfortunately, has one of the highest corporate income tax rates in the country. House Bill 252 would not only remove this burden, but also strengthen our global competitiveness. I'm currently in Romania, working with our team here, until we all plan to return to Alaska to launch our product publicly at the end of April. My hope is I can show our global following and my fellow co-founders that Alaska plays to our advantage, and it's an easy place for startups to call home. I'd like to thank the committee for their time and attention to this bill, and let them know that I'm available for any questions. Thanks.
I've got one. What type of phone are you using? I've got a better connection with you right now than when I called my wife in Soldotna.
Well, I'm actually just using Skype, so I'm glad to hear the quality is A-OK.
Oh, I'm impressed. any questions for Tyler? Representative Sadler.
I guess I can't look the opportunity by. Mr. Arnold, did you consider, I know you're from Alaska, that's laudable, did you consider going anyplace else in the nation to take advantage of their tax advantages for either of your businesses?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, no. Actually, when we founded our company, our startup was founded last October, we were thinking that Alaska could actually be one of the first to consider this 1202 legislation. The venture capitalists and lawmakers that I talked to down in Silicon Valley, this wasn't even on their radar yet. So we didn't look at any other states at the time, partly because we were excited about the prospect of this bill and just the very idea that Alaska could be the first in this race.
Thank you.
Any further questions? What time is it there?
Mr. Chairman, it's 11 hours ahead, so 3:09 a.m.
Oh. I think we'll let you get to bed.
He's 19.
Yeah. Or whatever. But
thank you very much.
Thanks again for participating and definitely taking the time and effort to call in. Jonathan Bittner. Boy, that name sounds familiar. Are you with us, Jonathan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, for the record, my name is Jonathan Bittner. I'm the Director of Business and Economic Development with the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. And if you can say that five times fast, you're a very impressive individual indeed.
And I believe you have a wife in the building, don't you?
I do. She's actually currently in this building. She's back for a few days before heading back down.
Well, please continue.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I just wanted to express AEDC's support for House Bill 252. We do quite a bit of local and national outreach to generate support for Anchorage and Alaska as a place to do business and also as a place to incorporate your business. And I probably don't need to tell any of you, but the competition for these businesses, this particular type of business, is very fierce among other states. And they are all doing quite a bit in the terms of incentives and other mechanisms to try to attract these businesses. Anchorage in and of itself is a good place to do business. We think that we have a lot of opportunities and a lot of advantages over many other areas, but tools like HB 252 are just absolutely crucial in putting ourselves ahead of the pack and really getting us out there instead of being, as I believe one of the members said, the tail end of the dog, the front end of the dog, which is always where you want to be. With that, I think just reiterate AEDC's support for the bill, and I hope that it gets passed.
Any questions for Mr. Bittner? Thanks again for calling in today. Alan Johnson, are you with us? Johnston? That's a question mark.
Did I push the right button?
Yeah, you're good now.
Okay. Yeah, my name's Alan Johnston, and I was a regional manager. I've been with Wedbush Securities for 35 years and regional manager for most of that time, and I'm kind of transitioning into my Encore career of making a life instead of making a living. And I've been a strong supporter of capacity building in Alaska. Got three kids, all born in Alaska. And I look at the aspirations of the students, and I get upset when I see the opportunities up here. And my focus is in helping people find a job, but encourage them to create a job. I've been doing the Alaska Business Plan Competition with universities, with UAA, APU, working together, and UAF and UAS, trying to break the barriers where they're all working together collectively. And the idea is trying to get the students to be thinking globally and raising aspirations of what they can do, so more Alaskans get involved in identifying problems and being part of the solutions instead of using somebody else's business model that was done from outside of Alaska. And I see the opportunities that we have and the quality of living that we have. The a vehicle like this for the House Bill 252, where we can actually, instead of having people just come to visit Alaska,
we can target folks that love the outdoors, that have the opportunity to actually move their small company and their children, their family, to a state that actually has a surplus and have a quality of life second to none. The this bill is specifically kind of geared for why you'd be using a C corporation instead of an LLC or an S corporation. It's specifically geared for folks that are kind of looking for a global, where you're looking for national and international markets. So your competitor isn't across the street. He's maybe 1,000, she's 1,000 or 10,000 miles away. And it gets back to the whole idea of raising aspirations of what can happen up here. I look at the Herb Longs of the world. You know, what we celebrate is what we get. A lot of people don't remember who he was, but he did the thermal tubes on the pipeline. I look at outside in Vermont, two-thirds of the wells being drilled in Vermont have to do with the thermal siphoning and heat tubes. And a lot of the original patents were done up here between Herb Long and Joe Balch. I look at Ed Clinton, as far as with the Dowland Bach, with the flow control valve. You know, we could be and should have been exporting intellectual property for years. And I believe this type of a vehicle will help start focusing people on it here, but also focusing people outside that might see opportunities saying, wow, Alaska is getting it. It's got an equality of life. It's got a vehicle like this that's second to none that's focused on national and international opportunities. And I'm very passionate about, you know, this is just a tool, but there's several tools that are being developed right now. And if we can train people to use them, and I look at Jonathan Bittner, I'm so impressed with the startup we can use involved with for software companies. The 32 people got up there talking is the most experiential, exciting thing they've been involved with, all 32, Jonathan included. All it is, it was six companies looking at being started, four of them looking at following through for software applications. And this is a perfect thing in tandem. And it's exciting to see the things that are going on in the past year. And I think this is can be a phenomenal opportunity for Alaska at little or no cost or even a negative cost. Well, I said I'm supposed to keep it short and sweet instead of fire hose, so I better shut up for questions.
Any questions? Thanks again for joining us today. Is there anybody else online? Nobody else online and nobody else in the room that would care to testify? With that, we will close out public testimony and committee. What would you like to do? Or should we just hold this over until next week?
I have no reason to hold it.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I would move HB 252 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill will move on to the Finance Committee. And with that, we'll take a brief at ease. We're back on the record. The last item on the calendar today. House Bill 300, Geographic COLA for Justices and Judges. We got Doug back, Doug Walfer. Welcome back. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and give us anything. We haven't had this one before yet. We just talked about it. So give us the whole thing. I'm thinking we heard you over, but.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Doug Wolliver. I'm the Deputy Administrative Director of the Alaska Court System. House Bill 300 was introduced by the House Rules Committee by request of the Alaska Supreme Court. And what this bill does is it updates the geographic pay differentials that apply to a judge's salary to bring them in line with the same formulas that apply to other state employees. Under current law, employees in the executive branch and in other employees in the judicial branch that are not judges receive a geographic differential that's applied to their salary. It's based on a formula that calculates the cost of living in various communities where they live. And that differential can vary from anywhere from 3.6% in Sitka to almost 37% in Kotzebue, Barrow, and Nome. This applies to all the state employees with the exception of judges. There are two caps on the geographic differential that judges receive. Together, those caps mean that the most they can get is less than 5% of a geographic differential for their salary. The total would be $7,000 for on a Superior Court judge's salary. Now, in an awful lot of the rural communities where judges serve, that money doesn't come close to offsetting the actual cost of living that's reflected in those communities. In those same communities where judges might get a $7,000 geographic differential, other state employees get $30,000 to $35,000 in differential to offset the cost of that of living out there. The legislature has approved geographic differentials out of recognition the fact that living in rural Alaska can be staggeringly expensive. The cost of living out there can be very, very high. The whole point of a differential is so that employees across the state are compensated somewhat equally. So if you live in Kotzebue, where although in this bill it's a 37% geographic differential, the McDowell study, which was the 2008 study that most recently looked at cost of living across the state, shows that 60% more expensive to live in Kotzebue than it does in Anchorage. Well, if you're a judge in Anchorage, it's a whole lot better deal than if you're a judge in Kotzebue. The judge in Kotzebue gets less than, like you say, 5% of a geographic differential. And the idea is, like you say, no matter what job you have, if you work for the state of Alaska, no matter what pay or range, the geographic differential is meant to level the field. Legislature's long supported this approach. The first geographic differential bill was introduced in 1960, passed in 1966. We've had geographic differentials ever since then. It's the right thing to do for employees, and for all the same reasons, it's the right thing to do for judges. Not only is this just an issue of fairness that rural judges be paid comparably to urban judges, but one of the big problems we have in rural Alaska is attracting enough attorney applicants to fill the judicial vacancies that occur. This has particularly been a problem in Bethel. We have a Superior Court vacancy out there. The Judicial Council did not get enough names the first time around to send two up to the governor, so they're starting over again trying to find more applicants for those for that position out there. They've had the same problem with the last time we filled a Superior Court judge out there and also the district court position there. But it isn't just an issue for Bethel. In 2013, Ben Esch, who's been the Superior Court judge in Nome for 17 years, will be retiring. He's the longest serving Superior Court judge in Nome's history. We would like a good applicant pool to replace him with another Ben Esch if we can. In Barrow, in 2014, Mike Jeffrey, who's been the Superior Court judge there since 1982, he's the longest-serving Superior Court judge in our state's history. And we would like to get an applicant pool to find another Mike Jeffrey if we can, to find people who are committed to these communities. There are a lot of hurdles to clear to get people to move and live in rural Alaska. But one of the barriers that we currently have is there's no realistic geographic differential. It's just if you're going to serve on the bench in rural Alaska, you're going to just lose out as compared to the urban areas. So it's also important to note the geographic differential does not apply to judicial retirement. So as the bill states, and this is long-standing law, we're not looking to change this, a judge's retirement is based on his or her base monthly salary, not including any geographic differential. So this will not affect judicial retirement. We're not looking to change that, but what we are looking to do is change the geographic differentials so that judges who serve in rural Alaska don't pay essentially a rural penalty. And that's what the bill does. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
First question, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doug, is there currently a problem in recruiting or retaining judges or justices, I'm going to use the terms interchangeably, in rural Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, there certainly has been a big problem in Bethel. It's not so much retaining. Once they are there, judges tend to stay. But we, as I mentioned, we've had a terrible time getting judges to, you know, getting attorneys to apply for some of these rural judgeships. And I can tell you, I don't know if this is a cause and effect thing, but the first time they went out for notice for the most recent Superior Court vacancy in Bethel, they did what the council, judicial council always does. They advertise widely. They let everybody know. They didn't get enough applicants to send two names up. The next time the judicial council sent out notice, they included in the notice that the court system was planning to come to the legislature and ask for this change with a strict thing. There's no guarantee we're going to get anything like this, maybe nothing whatsoever. But they still got a whole lot more applicants. I don't know if that's because of this change or not, but I can tell you that rural judges, just in their conversations with other attorneys when judicial vacancies come up, it's a sore point.
Okay. Paul? Yeah, how long, I understand that there's a chronological cap on how long you can serve as a judge. I guess, is it 70 years? How long must a judge serve to qualify for a state retirement?
I believe it's 5 years to become vested, and then they're fully vested at 15. And the judge, you're right, the Constitution requires retirement at age 70, which is what Mike Jeffrey hits in Barrow in 2014.
Okay. I'll keep going. The bill packet has a really interesting table with numbers listing the geographical differentials and so forth. And I was looking at some of the numbers that the non-covered and union geographical differentials, there seems to be pretty strong for rural. I'm sorry, before I go there, is there a reason Anchorage isn't on there? Is Anchorage the zero?
To the chair, Representative Sadler, yes.
Okay. Fairbanks seems to not be treated real well in terms of the cost of living, which I'm going to ask you, are the cost of living differentials based on are the index to the inflation rate?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. No, you'll see there. This is kind of a complicated chart, but we wanted to include a variety of variables. The section that shows Fairbanks at 15.2%. That's the non-covered geographic differentials. That's the statutory rate that applies to members of the executive branch who are not covered by collective bargaining agreements. That rate hasn't changed in years. And the 3%, which is two columns over, that is the most recent union-negotiated contracts that adopted the McDowell study from 2008.
That helps. Okay. Okay.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A real easy question, I suppose. If this was in effect today, how many judges, how many people would it actually affect?
It would affect 23 Superior Court judges and 11 District Court judges.
So 34 total. Okay. Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, I've got some bad news for Doug. We've got a committee member that's working on an amendment that wasn't done in time to get it out today.
Okay.
So we're going to hold the public comments, and anybody else is going to be available to testify until the next meeting when we can get the amendment out, and we will get it out 24 hours before the meeting, so everybody we'll have a chance to look at it, and you won't be sandbagged by it. You'll have a good idea of what it is, and I've got a feeling that it'll be well thought out and hopefully footnoted. somehow I think it involves a table, but I can see part of it from here.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it wasn't available for today. So is there anybody in the room that came to testify on this bill that we can – I don't think we had anybody signed up. But if there is anybody that would do it, we can open up public testimony. And I don't think we have anybody online either, do we? Well, with that, I think we will adjourn and get it scheduled as fast as we can for the what should be the final hearing on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And with that, we'll adjourn at 4:32.